Welcome again to Cottage Talk Extra Time. I'm Russ Goldman. Co-hosting with me today will be Yanis Janaeus and Mike Gregg. In this episode, we'll be looking back at the 1-1 draw for Fulham on Saturday against Preston North End at Craven Cottage. We have much to get through, and it looks like one of my co-hosts is already on the line with us. So I'm going to bring him on right now. Mr. Mike Gregg, how you doing?
Yeah, hi, Russ. Doing well, and looking forward to doing the show. And, lots to talk about from yesterday, really.
Yeah, listen, there's a good amount to talk about. Obviously, we still have the open head coach position hanging over the club right now. We're definitely going to be talking about that during the week. You and I have talked about it, and myself, you, and Yanis are going to be talking about the structure of the club. Definitely want to do that sometime during this week, so we'll be looking for another episode of Cottage Talk during the week because I really want to delve deeper into the situation with the club, how they're set up, how they've changed from years past, and how they're now structured moving forward to really debate that. So we're going to be doing that during the week, but today we're really just going to be looking back at the match, Mike, and you were there. So before we go any further, just share with me the atmosphere at Craven Cottage yesterday. Before I even ask you about the actual match, I'm curious, what was the atmosphere like?
It was a bit muted first half, and at fair play to the Preston North End fans, they were there in decent numbers and made plenty of noise, and we were very muted first half, which was, you know, a reflection of the performance by the team. And then in the second half, after a couple of decisions didn't go our way, I have to say the Hammersmith End and the Riverside, even where I was sitting yesterday for a change, got behind the team, and the Hammersmith End were stood up for quite a good length of time as well. And, despite all the adversaries we're going through and, you know, the problems we're having, in the end, we support the team. And for once, we got behind them wholly for, you know, a good 20, 30 minutes yesterday in that second half, and forgot about the other issues. Towards the end, there were a couple of, you know, moments where there were, you know, negative chants towards Mike Rigg and, you know, calls for we want a manager, that type of thing. But I wouldn't say that was, it was small pockets making that noise. It wasn't as if it was the whole crowd.
Okay, very good. Listen, the reason why I'm glad that you brought that up, because someone messaged me on the Cottage Talk Facebook page, wanted us to talk about it. Since you were there, you can really answer this before I bring Yanis on because he's on the line. And again, this is from Ollie Asbro. He actually messaged me on the Facebook page. He said, I was at the game today. A lot of chanting for Rigg out at the Hammersmith End. I disagree. I would love for you to raise this in your next episode. So we're talking about it. And again, Mike, you're hearing, you know, you were hearing that it was in pockets. It wasn't really this strong vibe going throughout the crowd. It was more just in pockets about Mike Rigg.
It's one of those things with Fulham. The acoustics isn't great, but I was sat pretty much three or four rows in front of the director's box, and you could hear it, but it wasn't that loud. It wasn't that passionate either. So I would be lying if I said I thought the whole of the Hammersmith End was singing it. To me, it was pockets in the Hammersmith End and over in the Stevenage Road stand as well, but it didn't last very long. There was a couple of rig outs, and then the loudest one I heard was "We want a manager," you know,
right.
Which I've never heard in 37 years of going to a football game, but you know, so something new from yesterday. But it was not a sustained singing aimed at Mike Rigg. It was, you know, very short, but it was audible and they would have heard it.
Okay, very good. And again, listen, you know, we're going to be talking about Mike Rigg in this next episode. You and Yanis, you know, again, hopefully we're going to be doing it this week because I want to talk about the structure of the club and we can delve into this a little bit more regarding Mike Rigg, his role, and of course the role of a new head coach. But Mike, it looks like Yanis is with us, so I'm going to bring him on. Mr. Janaeus, are you with us?
Hello, Russ. Hello, Mike.
Yanis, how are you doing, my friend? How's the weather up in Canada?
It's pretty cool, actually. We had 15 degrees on Friday, but yesterday it was 2 degrees. So it looks like it's time for the willy warmers. We've not had much snow down here yet, but I reckon in the next week or two, as Christmas comes in, we're going to get bombed like we always do.
Great. Okay. Well, Giannis, listen. Mike was at the match. He's obviously going to share his thoughts, but I believe you had a chance to watch the replay. I watched the replay this morning. Just share with me your overall thoughts about the match yesterday.
Well, I didn't like the lineup to start with. I didn't like the 4-4-2 setup. I was mystified as to why Kavanagh was brought in. You know, you got LBC. You've obviously got Pringle, and you got Kaká, and the goal we conceded was as soft as a blancmange. And then second half, Grant's changed the formation, the 3-5-2. It's given Fredericks more license to move forward, and we played much better. And you know, lovely goal by Ross, and it was absolute quality. And probably on the balance of play, had a couple of decisions gone our way, we probably could have got the 3 points. But it's funny talking about the, you know, the rig out thing.
Right.
My counter to that is, I'd be confused as to who to blame right now, in terms of a chant. Do you say rig out? Do you say Khan out? Do you say Mac out? Do you say all out? I mean, the fact is, we're three weeks past Kit getting released, and we still don't have a manager, and. A lot of that might be apathy from the fans because they don't know what to think right now. None of us do, because we don't know what's going on, apart from, you know, the Pearson nonsense, the Clark rejection. And whoever comes in as a manager now will know that they're fourth choice, or fifth choice, or whatever it's going to be. So I thought the second half of it was good and much, much better. First half was messy against a team that tends to struggle away from home.
Okay, very good, Giannis. Mike, over to you. You, again, were at that match. Just share with us an overall view of what you watched. We will be talking about the starting 11 right after, because I definitely want to get into it, because there was a last-minute change to the starting 11 that we definitely have to talk about. But let's just talk about the overall match for you.
I mean, it was a disappointing first half, and we made Preston look very good at times. I mean, we spoke about it in the pre-match show about how direct they're meant to be, and we allowed them to play the ball on the floor throughout the half. They were getting it wide, and we were set up like the away team. You know, it was, you know, four in midfield, McCormick deep behind Dembele, and we allowed them to have the initiative all through the half, to be honest. And it was very disappointing. And then second half, made the tactical change which was required, and really, you look at the players we have, or the key ones that we have, and I don't know how you can change that formation now. That has to be, the key has to be three in midfield, three at the back, but anyway. And we were much better. We were a bit slow, 5 minutes, it took us 5-6 minutes to get going, but then we were the better team, I thought, in the second half. And you know, a few shouts for penalties or whatever we'll talk about later. But overall, we didn't create enough chances again, but we were, for me, the better side in the second half. But again, I've come away two different halves, a 1-1 draw. For me, that's a fair result, and we made a team well below us look a good team. And of course, they scored with a header. which they haven't scored all season. So
I know you tweeted that out, Mike. You actually tweeted that out beforehand.
Yeah, I regret that now, actually. But it was a strange atmosphere. It was pretty cold yesterday as well. But it was a flat performance overall, and 1-1, fair result.
Okay, very good. All right, guys, before I get your thoughts on the starting 11, I'm actually going to read part of the Grant reaction. This is right on the Fulham website, because I think this sets us up talking about the starting 11. Again, this is from, I guess you could say, caretaker head coach Peter Grant. Quote, "The first half was difficult for us. We had to make a change right at the 11th hour, which upset us a bit. Not the personnel, but just because of the way we've been training all week with Matilla. He's more defensive-minded, and we were going to play Jamie O'Hara a bit higher up the pitch. We had to adjust by bringing Scott back in, and he'd been out for a few months. So that changed the dynamic of the team. I thought that told in the first half. To lose a goal from a set play was a disappointing thing, as Matilla would have been marking the boy who scored. I was pleased to get in at 1-0, to be perfectly honest. We made adjustments, and I have to give credit to the boys in the second half. I thought there was only one team that was going to go on and win it, and it was ourselves. On this decision to tinker with a formation at halftime, Grant added, I decided about 15 minutes in that I needed to change it. We knew we were lacking inches. We were a bit weak, so we had to adjust it at the break. Sean Hutchinson came on, and playing the three at the back really suited us second half. We hadn't worked on it, so I have to give them great credit. Again, that is from the caretaker head coach, Peter Grant. And, Mike, I want to go to you because, again, the big news was after the announcement of the starting 11, they actually had a follow-up announcement that Sakari Matilla would not be playing because of a back injury. And then, of course, Scott Parker came on. Talk about your initial thoughts of the starting 11 and then the change.
Well, yeah, when we saw the first lineup and we saw Matilla, it was going to be it was obvious it was going to allow O'Hara to go forward a bit more, similar to the second half last week when he came on as a sub. And, you know, as we said again in the pre-show, you know, all these injuries that players apparently had, but, you know, the vast majority of them were playing. But I suppose, you know, this is not even in retrospect. You know, you saw Cavanagh's name again there in the starting 11. And then, you know, where there was no Dan Byrne, there was no LVC, there was no Kaká, and none of them had been mentioned as being injured. And
right.
And then also the comments from Grant about, you know, you knew he was going to change it 15 minutes in. Well, I'm sorry, if you know you've made a ricket and you need to change things, or, you know, why wait to half time? You know, I've seen managers make subs within the first 15, 20 minutes when it's gone wrong. You know, somebody did indicate yesterday that, you know, it was good that Cavanagh went off at half time because he would have got booed if he'd gone off the pitch. But, you know, I'm sorry, you've got to look at the bigger picture. So if he knew it was that bad and he needed change and he should have done it early in the half, he shouldn't be scared of correcting mistakes you've made or just the way the game was panning out. And so, yeah, with the lineup and then Parker coming in, I just questioned it because he hasn't kicked the ball for the first team. And then you've got zero pace in that midfield with Parker and O'Hara as well. So you do sort of look at it and go, well, you know, there were other options. But, you know, he went with that. And, yes, I mean, you plan all week for a game. But, you know, all these players know each other. And, you know, for one player to get injured, it shouldn't be such a big deal for someone to drop into that position. I'm a great believer, if you have a system, every player in the squad should know how that system works for every player. So if you've got to go and fit in the left wing or, you know, up front, you should know what everyone else's job. A proper coach team should have that.
No, very good point there, Mike. And before I go to Giannis, because I definitely want Giannis's thoughts, I want to go back and talk about bringing in Scott Parker and Grant's comments that I just read about Jamie O'Hara, that again, if Matilla was going to be your defensive midfielder, that would allow O'Hara to go further up the pitch and be more creative. What I watched, and I was really keen on this in the first half, and I checked the average position on the Fulham website. Jamie O'Hara, to me, looked like, especially in the first half, played deep and was not able or did not go more forward as Grant probably hope to. Did you see that as well?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, so if Matilla was going to be the deeper player and you're going to bring Parker in, don't unsettle anything else. Just put the player you're now going to start in that position. So it should have been Parker being the deeper player. O'Hara in the first half was quite poor at times and he was chasing shadows and slipping over. He was struggling quite a lot. But, yeah, I totally agree, yeah. O'Hara was playing his usual deep role when really, you know, it should have been Parker. You go and sit in front of the back four, you're 35 years old, you haven't
That's
got
right.
the legs to get forward all the time, and allow O'Hara a bit more freedom. But, you know, it didn't pan out that way.
No, it didn't. You know, and again, listen, I am glad that Grant made the change at halftime, but very good point by you, Mike. If he knew 15 minutes into this match, why didn't he change it in midstream? Why didn't he bring on Sean Hutchinson, I don't know, 20, 25 minutes in? Because what I watched in the second half was completely different, and the changes made a huge amount of difference. Like you mentioned, the midfield, very, very slow in the first half. Well, now you move Kearney into the midfield. You have three in the middle. The dynamic completely changed. I also think in back, it allowed Tim Ream to be more comfortable on the left of the three, and then you have Sean Hutchinson in the middle. For me, it really worked, Mike.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'll give Grant a little bit of an excuse. He did say that they hadn't worked on it, but we have played with three at the back recently. So, you know, to make a change, all you've got to do is you put the player on, you get the message out to him where people have got to go, and they should understand. I mean, you know, if you've got Fredericks in the team, no matter who's on the left, I think you've got to play him as a wing back. He's wasted as a sort of natural right back because he can't get forward, and you know. So yeah, it was certainly better second half, and I just think that formation suits our squad of players at this moment in time.
Listen, I completely agree with you. I've seen enough evidence that the 3-5-2, 5-3-2, whatever it morphs into, works based on the talent that we have. Again, it allows Kearney to play a more central role where he's most suited. It allows, like I said, Tim Ream to go to the left of the three, which I think suits him better. And then you have someone in the middle. It can be Sean Hutchinson or Dan Byrne, and allows them to be in the middle. And then you have Richard Stearman on the right. I think it all flows better. And then, of course, you have the wingbacks. You know, again, both of these players want to get forward, so it suits everyone, including the guys up front, because I think it suits to their abilities as well. So whoever comes in really needs to look hard at the talent on the team and match up the system that works best. And I'm with you, Mike. I'm now convinced that this is a suitable system and should be used more often moving forward. All right. Looks like Giannis is back with us. Giannis.
Hey,
I want to get your thoughts on the starting 11 and some of the stuff that we've just been talking about with the change from Matilla, because he was not able to play. I would say he came off injured. He didn't even make the starting 11, but there was a last-minute change. What were your thoughts about the starting 11? I really want to get your thoughts also on Sean Kavanaugh, because I have a hockey analogy I want to throw at you in a little bit, but go ahead.
Well, I think it's a whole load of horse nonsense, and we'll start with the beginning.
Okay.
He said he made a comment about the fact that it upset us because Matilla was unavailable. Now, it didn't upset them, it upset him. That's what the problem was. It flustered him and he didn't know what to do, and he's deciding, oh, right, so we're gonna bring Parker in. So I mean, if good managers, you're gonna get, you know, players get injured at warm ups for crying out loud. They fall down the stairs, they trip over a dog. And when one player gets hurt and is not available, it should be a fluid decision. It should be done without duress. For him to turn around and say that, can you really see these players getting upset in terms of, oh, no, here we go, well, we've lost Matilla and we've got Parker coming in, our rhythm's going to be spoiled. As Mike said, these are professionals who have played under this system and the 3-5-2. Good professionals are adjustable and they're fluid. So this, to me, that was a cop-out. Number two, what Mike said about the 15 minutes in, and he realized it was all wrong. I mean, is this guy a goat or what? You mean to tell me 15 minutes into a game, you realize that it's all wrong, but you're going to wait till halftime? So what would have happened if we were three goals down? Or am I missing a point here? I mean, to me, that's village idiocy. If you realize that the formation's wrong, if the setup's all wrong, make a bloody substitution. Do it early. You know. We conceded the goal after 11 minutes. The equilibrium's obviously been upset. It's been, you know, jiggled around. Make a substitution accordingly and settle the team down. But he waited till half time, and then his post match press conference, he's gloating about the fact that, well, we're here to make a change. You idiot! You had half an hour to make a change in the first half. No wonder the fans were pissed off at half time. The Kavanaugh thing mystified me a little bit, to be honest. He is a young player. I'm certainly going to give him that much. He didn't have a great first half. We can agree on that. So the sub's been made, but better still, the formation was changed. We've played that formation in a few games now. We look very comfortable. We create a lot more chances. It allows players like Fredericks and Husband to move forward. And the second half, I think, was exemplified that. It was a much better performance. We were better attacking. But it just scratches me. I scratch my head as to a manager, a coach, whatever the hell you want to call him, making excuses about a late scratch and then admitting that for two-thirds of the first half, he sat on his ass, knowing a change needs to be made, and did nothing. It's mind-blowing.
You know what? It's funny. The minute I saw that and I read that, I'm like, we have to talk about this because, again, different sport, Giannis. You know, again, in the NFL, they talk about halftime adjustments. Well, some of the best coaches adjust during the game. They don't wait for halftime. This is a similar situation. You don't need to wait. It's not working. You make a change and you move on. And
right.
Again, getting back to Kavanaugh, and again, he's a young player. I still think he has a bright future. But right now, coming back after not playing for a long time, now he's played in these last two matches. Again, this is my hockey analogy that we use with the Bruins. There are certain players that are just passengers, meaning that they're not, you know, that they're there, but they're not really being an influence in the game. And unfortunately, right now, Sean Kavanaugh is a passenger. And hopefully, eventually, you know, again, he'll be able to have an influence in the game. But right now, he should not be playing for Fulham. It just doesn't fit what the other players are doing. And he's just, you know, he's just there. And they need someone on that side that's going to be dynamic. And unfortunately, he cannot do it right now. So, again, I blame that on Grant for picking him 2 weeks in a row. Sorry, you shouldn't have picked Sean Kavanaugh. He does have a bright future, but right now is not the time for him.
I was going to say, the other thing that really annoys me about putting Kavanaugh in is actually for Kavanaugh himself, because by doing what he's done and playing him the last two games, you're setting the kid up to fail as well. And,
that's,
you know,
a good point.
He's clearly not ready to come back, okay? He's clearly not, he's not 100% match fit. You've got players like LVC, you know, and Pringle and Kaká that could
take that.
And they're not in there. And poor Kavanaugh's really, you know, he's a deer in the headlights. And the poor, he's still a young lad, and I would have felt very sorry for him. I was thinking of an analogy last night in terms of the decision-making of Grant yesterday, and I hope I don't offend too many fans when I say it, but I'll say it anyway.
Okay.
And I've seen less stiffs in a porn movie. I mean, I mean, most fans would have been sitting there going, what is going on here? We conceded a headed goal to... And then the worst thing is Grant turns around and says, well, if Matilda had been playing, that would have been his player.
Yes, he did.
What sort of excuse is that? Like, really? Is that the best you've got? You know what? It's get a bloody coach in. Do it now. It's 3 weeks in, and we've got this caretaker who's all over the shop, and we've got Nottingham Forest next week. We're 6 points off Birmingham in the playoff spots, but right now we don't look as though we're doing anything. So this is a critical next few days for the club.
I couldn't agree more, Giannis, and again, I'm going to say this because I actually tweeted this out. What has driven me crazy is that the last two matches were lost opportunities. They dropped 4 points. This is an opportunity. If they win those two matches, both matches were extremely winnable. And if they made a move during the international break, found their man there, maybe, just maybe, we would have won, gotten the bump from that new head coach, new manager bump, and would have won these last two matches. Then you're talking, you're only 2 points behind Birmingham. Look how different it would have been. You're six, but as someone pointed out to me, guys, and this is a very good point because we have to be honest here, they're only seven from the bottom three. So, again, they're smack dab in the middle. They're where they should be. But you know what? In my heart, they shouldn't be here because, again, if you bring in the right man over this international break and you get the team going, you know, Fulham could be in a completely different position. It was a lost opportunity these last two matches. I'm angry about that. Because, again, this season's really hanging by a thread. The opportunity to possibly get top six, it was there for them. It was literally there for them. And, honestly, they blew it. They blew it these last two matches. And I put the blame on the people running the club. Because if they got someone in, maybe, just maybe, we would have won these two matches Instead, we have the situation that we still have, and we're still looking for a head coach. As you could tell, guys, I'm not happy about this because I just saw this as the opportunity to seriously make a run, and now again it's still there, but it's dangling. It really could have been serious if they won these last two matches. It just makes things harder. All right, all right, Mike. I'm going to go back to. We're just going to go through some key moments again. Like you've already mentioned, the first half was more about Preston North End taking it to Fulham. Again, let's be honest, they did. They, you know, I wasn't expecting that, but they controlled a good amount of the play, and they had a corner early, and we defended that. But unfortunately, shortly after that, they had a short corner that they scored on. Talk about this goal by Preston North End. And you, who actually tweeted out that they hadn't scored off of a header, now they score on a header. I can imagine what was going through your mind.
Yeah, I mean, it was there was a bit of controversy, actually, whether it was a corner or not. But I think it did just come off Fredericks, and then Lewis left it.
Are you still there, Mike?
Yeah, I'm still there. Yeah, I thought you cut off me.
Okay.
It was a bit of controversy there, and I thought Lewis should have got the ball. But anyway, they take the corner. It's short. They get the cross in, goes across goal, and not the tallest bloke in the world is at the back there. And I think he was Husband's man. And they've headed in their first headed goal of the season. And we're one down, and it's, you know, another poor start to a game. We had everything from last season where we, you know, 60, 70% of the time we always went behind. And we're just falling into that trap again this year. And somebody posted the last four games, the half-time score, and then the second half scores. We're just such slow starters. But no one, the commentary, I saw the highlights, and Sean Davis mentioned, you know, no one on the posts. And
he did.
He's quite right. You know, I am old-fashioned. You have one man on the front, one man on the back, and you leave a man on the halfway line. But, you know, we just don't do that at all. And it was disappointing. But they'd had one go right across the goal not long before, and also the shot early on, which Lewis saved as well. And we were one down and deserved to be.
Okay, very good. I just want to share a comment that I have on Sean Davis, you know, because I have to watch these matches back on replays, and so does Giannis. I want to give him kudos because he's not what we would call a homer, meaning that again, he just thinks everything is great for the home team. He's very open. He's very honest. He tells it like it is. I love the fact that Sean Davis does these home matches, does the commentary. He does an excellent job, so I just want to mention that for anyone that listens like I do and watches. Sean Davis, really, seriously, he lets me know exactly what's going on. He's not afraid to talk badly about Fulham when they're playing badly, and I appreciate that. I really appreciate it, so I just wanted to mention that. All right, Mike, before we talk about the second half, Fulham actually had a couple of opportunities. Tom Kennedy's left-footed shot from outside the box early in the 18th minute went close but missed to the right, and then, of course, Moussa Dembele in the 30th minute had a right-footed shot from outside the box. That was nicely saved by the goalkeeper. But in essence, the first half was more about what Preston North End were doing to Fulham. The reverse that Fulham were not doing to Preston North End. They, for whatever reason, it was disjointed. It did not flow well. It was not a good first half. And then, Mike, I'm going to go right back to you because I want to get your thoughts on this, and then I'll go to you, Giannis. Early in the second half, there were some questionable non-calls by the referee. One that, again, questionable for the Preston North End supporters because, again, they had someone go down in the box. And then Fulham had two. Mike, I want to get, you know, again, I'll give my commentary quickly on the Preston North End. That wasn't a penalty. That's just my thoughts on that. Mike, I want to get your commentary on the two shouts for penalties, one with Ryan Fredericks and then another with James Husband. I had a chance to look at both of them. I want to get your thoughts on it, and Giannis, then I'm going to go to you because I want your commentary on this as well. Were either one of these penalties?
Well, I'll go back to the Preston one, and at the time I shouted, get up, you know. it was clearly a dive.
Yes.
But the angle I had initially on the Fredericks one, I didn't think it was a penalty. It was just the way he felt. He went for the ground. I didn't see a tackle. There was a lot of people between me and that, but and the tackle. But no, I didn't think that was a penalty. The husband one on my first viewing, I thought, yeah, he's got a shout there. But then watching the replay, it's a shoulder barge or a
put. Yes.
I don't know. You might see it given, you might not. But if that had been given against us, I would have been very unhappy. So I'm going to say
exactly. No,
it wasn't.
Okay, very good. And, Mike, I've watched both several times. And I actually messaged a bunch of us to say that in both instances, I didn't think it was a penalty. And like you had mentioned, if the roles were reversed and this happened to Fulham, we would be screaming our heads off because if it was called a penalty, because I don't think either one was a penalty. That's just my thoughts on it. Giannis, do you feel any different on either one of these shouts for a penalty?
Slightly.
Okay.
The Preston appeal for a penalty, it wasn't a penalty, and I'd have given him a yellow card for a dive. The husband one, Mike's right, it was a shoulder charge and nothing wrong with the challenge. But the Fredericks one, I've seen refs give that one. I thought it was because of the angle, the camera angle. I thought that might have been a penalty. He's not given it. That's fine. I suppose he's the one thing we can say about the ref is he was consistent. The husband, the thing that worried me about the three, or the two decisions against us was the reaction of the players, especially
husband. I agree.
Husband's already come back from that ridiculous meltdown he had, and then he goes and gets himself another yellow card. So I don't know what bee's in his bonnet right now. But for us to move forward, we have got to make sure we keep 11 players on the pitch, and we've got to be certainly disciplined. And you know, not every decision is going to go your way. And really, honestly, I can't believe he'd really think that a penalty should have been given. For that challenge, there was nothing wrong with the challenge. It's the men's game there. So, but as I said, the Fredericks one, seen it a couple of times now. I'm not sure how to call it, but I have seen that called.
Okay, fair enough there, Giannis. Fair enough. Mike, I want to go back to you because there is one thing that I do want to talk about, and Giannis already touched on it, was the reaction of James Husband. I'm a fan of James Husband. I want them to sign him in January, honestly. I do. But I'm a little worried by some of his reactions after situations, and this one's a little bit worrying for me, Mike. What were your thoughts about his reaction after wanting a penalty that was not called?
Well, you know, the defender sort of gave him a bit of a big one, and and then he pulled him down. It was a silly reaction, but it wasn't the only one. And you know, I was with my old man watching the game, and he said, you know, we'd be lucky if we keep 11 players on the pitch here because there are a number of even free kicks or disputed, you know, decisions where you know Parker was running up to the ref and McCormick was back chatting the ref as well, and we lost our discipline for a little bit there, and it might be just a combination of frustration and not getting results or everything that's going on behind the scenes, you know, training, that type of thing. But and with McCormick as captain and with people like Stearman in the team, Ream, Parker, O'Hara, they really need to grow up a bit and have a bit more discipline, even when things are going against you. And, Husband, promising player. We all like him, I think. But he's got a bit of a reaction to him, which will cause him problems if he doesn't learn to control it.
Yeah,
I totally agree, Mike. And, you know, again, I want to stress this. I like him as a player. I want him to be on the pitch. I just want him to be on the pitch. That's the bottom line. But some of the reactions that you mentioned, that it wasn't just Husband, it was just the overall reactions, they need to keep it in check. You know, we need 11 players on the pitch. And they showed some emotion. Sometimes I like emotion, but in this instance, it was more out of frustration. And, again, they need to keep that under control. They need that discipline, like you mentioned, Mike. And they're lacking a little discipline right now. And that might be, you know, again, a reason why everything's going on here. Maybe that's a reaction to what's going on with the club, like you said,
yeah.
Not having a head coach at this point. You know, again, it's a little scary right now because the players seem a little bit agitated, and hopefully they can get their discipline under control and realize that we need them on the pitch. You know, I like emotion. I just, you know, sometimes you just need to control your anger a little bit, and I think we saw a little lack of control. They just need to get that under control because we need them on the pitch. That's where I'm coming on that. All right, Mike, I'm going to go right back to you. Let's talk about the goal. This is quite a free kick by Ross McCormack. Talk about the goal. And I do want to mention that you can actually watch Gentleman Jim's reaction, which I posted on the Cottage Talk Facebook page. It's actually brilliant. You have to see his reaction, his call, and his reaction afterwards. So thank you, Sammy James, for posting that. You can also see it on Twitter as well. But I want you to talk about the goal, Mike.
Yeah, well, I mean, Kenny had a similar free kick, which he was unlucky with. But, yeah, I think it was a Fredericks foul, and Fredericks even got booked, didn't he, when he, you know, clapped the ref. So goes back to what we were saying a second ago about discipline. And I've been quite critical of McCormack earlier on this season with his free kicks, you know, most of them hitting the top of the stand or, you know, going nowhere near the goal. But he seems to have found his range now, and it was a lovely free kick. And once we got that, we got back into the game, and we, you know, we could have won it, but it all goes back to the fact is we're just not creating enough chances. But, you know, a great free kick by Ross.
No, it was. It was, Mike. And before I go to Giannis, again, just to transition to the end of the match, something that Emilio pointed out to me, unfortunately Emilio could not join us, but he mentioned this. He thought that a key point in this match was, believe it or not, bringing Matt Smith on when he brought him on in, I want to say around the 75th minute, Matt Smith came on around then, and Scott Parker came off, and I want to get your thoughts on this because Emilio, one, thought he should have come on early, but two, he didn't have the impact that he thought he was going to have. What were your thoughts about bringing on Matt Smith at that point, Mike?
Well, I thought it made sense because we're playing with, you know, three at the back, and you've got Kearney, O'Hara and Parker in the middle there. So you can sacrifice one of them. And, it was good of Grant, you know, to actually put him on with Dembele up top, and then Ross drops back a bit more. And I might be wrong, but I'm pretty sure that's, you know, Smith and Dembele haven't played together very well. But I thought, while Smith never made a huge impact, I thought they played off each other or looked as if, you know, if something came off a header, they were, you know, close together. One of the things that I saw yesterday was you expect, if you're going to bring Smith on, you have to accept that the backs are going to go long. They're going to get the ball and they're going to go long. And oddly enough, we never did that yesterday, you know, so, or not enough times. I was going to expect Stearman and Ream, they're going to get the ball at the back and it's going to be a diagonal because, as I've always said, Smith's first reaction to everything is, where's the ball? I'm going to go to the opposite side. And, we didn't actually play it as long as we usually do when Smith comes on. And was that detrimental to, getting a result? Because in the end, he's plan B. So, oddly enough, maybe we should have played it longer.
That's why I wanted to bring that up, Mike. Giannis, what are your thoughts about when Grant brought on Matt Smith? Was it the wrong call? Should it have come on earlier?
I think it smacked of desperation. We created enough chances, but we just weren't converting. And Matt Smith seems to be a lucky charm. When he's come off the bench, he's had almost immediately an impact, a positive impact. And I suppose he thought, well, you know what, this might be the last throw of the dice. I would have probably brought him on 15, 20 minutes earlier, just because it would give Preston North End a different look. And I think that's the beauty of substitution. It's not just about injury and tactical. Sometimes it's just changing the style subtly, and all it needs is a subtle change to throw a back three or back four off guard. And, he was effective as soon as he came on. But something you said earlier about the Fredericks reaction to the penalty that wasn't given, he was given a yellow card for clapping. I thought, I agree with Gentleman Jim, it was a ridiculous call. I mean, ref, get a sense of humour. You know, I called him over and said, oi, don't show me up like that again, or else I will give you a yellow. But he's immediately, I mean, in a nanosecond, he produced the yellow card. So there was certainly that. But you also mentioned about the frustration of the players with what's going on behind the scenes, and I think it's absolutely right. On the one side, you could strongly argue, well, they're professionals, and they're paid to do a job, and they're paid well, and the fans should expect 100% of them every single game and put it in. But on the other side, you could argue from an athlete's standpoint that really this chopping and changing, and obviously the manager going, and this uncertainty, and don't tell me they don't, you know, listen to, read, or watch the media. It creates a lot of uncertainty and hesitance, and a lot of chatting, and that takes focus off the game plans, off the games themselves. And that's one thing that whoever the hell's making these decisions about who's going to come in may have forgotten. It does have an impact on us as fans. We're upset. But it also has an impact on the players. And at the end of the day, it's them that go across the white lines. So the 3 weeks that we've gone without a manager, I mean, this guy's, let's be honest, he's a caretaker slash stiff slash, you know, bottle washer. We've got to get a manager in, if only just to settle the players down. And because if we're going to make any sort of run, the player, the coach has to come in quickly and, you know, set up his system. So whoever's listening from the club now, they're probably all sleeping. But if they are, I hope they take note of this, because it's become an embarrassment now. And please don't underestimate the impact that not having a manager is having on the players.
It's a valid point, Giannis, seriously. And I've thought about this. And the minute Mike said it, it really hit me as well. You know, if I'm a player and I don't know who my head coach is, I know that this man's there to help me. But again, I need to make an impression for the new man who comes in, whoever that is, and maybe I'm trying too hard, maybe I'm frustrated, maybe it's all coming out. And I think we're seeing some of that. I think that's what part of what happened yesterday, that anger, you know, again, that frustration, maybe that's part of all this, the thing that's hanging over the club without having a head coach. Maybe that's part of the reaction you're seeing on the pitch, which is unfortunate. That's why they need to find someone real soon. And I'm all, you know, listen, I'm a patient person, but I got to be honest with you, at this point, they need to go much faster here. They need to do something this week. I truly believe that. For that, because like you mentioned, Giannis, the Nottingham Forest now match is huge now. It's massive. They can win this match, but I would feel a hell of a lot better if they had a man in charge. And then we get that bump. They need that new head coach, new manager bump. They needed it for these two matches. I'm still mad about that, but they could still use it. So get them in this week. Whoever it is, please get them in this week. Make sure that, you know, you got all your ducks in a row. Get that person in, because the team really needs it. All right. Guys, let's move on. Let's quickly talk about the stats from the match and what I always call stat attack. Just go through them with you quickly and get your thoughts on it. Let's start with possession. Fulham had 56.9% to Preston North End having 43.1%. Total shots, Fulham had 11. Preston North End had 17. On target, each had 3. Key passes, Fulham had 9. Preston North End had 11. Attacking passes, Fulham had 301. Preston North End had 263. Overall passes, Fulham had 504 to 368 for Preston North End. Crosses, Fulham had 20. Preston North End had 27. Crossing accuracy, Fulham were only at 20%, and Preston North End were much better, 37%. Corners, I think this is a stat that stands out a little bit. Fulham only had 3 corners, and Preston North End had 6. Duels won, Fulham inched it by a little bit, 49-48. Aerial duels won, 16-14 in favor of Fulham. Interceptions, this one's interesting. Fulham only had 6 interceptions. Preston North End had 20, and that pretty much sums up what I listened to. They certainly intercepted a good amount of passes there. Interceptions inside the box, even at 2 apiece. All right, Mike, I'll start with you. What stands out from you from the stats I just shared?
Well, again, we've been outshot, haven't we? 17-11, and as a home side, you know, it's a good job that, you know, Preston are the lowest scorers in the league, and you know, that showed with their accuracy from 17 shots. So very disappointing. We just cannot continue to allow, just percentage-wise, 17 shots a game, because the odds are you're always going to let in a goal. You know, we were tackling well. It's a good tackling success there by our team. And we blocked nine crosses as well. So are the fullbacks learning a bit more? But 28 clearances, Russ. You know, I mean, that's,
yes.
Or 23, sorry. And that's just, you know, get rid of it, isn't it? I mean, which there's a time and a place, but it just shows the sort of, you know, pressure we're under or nervousness. We just want to get rid of it. So it's a real mixed set of statistics there. Passing accuracy 81%, attacking passes 300. You know, they're fairly good numbers, but we're just not doing enough with it, and that's the problem. And I think we were very lucky to get away with the draw, and we need to somehow, whoever comes in needs to get us working defensively as a unit to cut down these shots if we've got any aspirations of moving up the table.
Okay, very good assessment there, Mike. How about you, Giannis?
3 shots on target. I mean, how many games are you going to win with 3 shots on target? Not many. And it's even worse when you're playing in front of your 17,000 of your home fans. It's great that we're trying to keep possession. It's great that we've got the passes going. But at the end of the day, it's going to be shots that are going to dictate if we're going to score goals to win games. And 3 shots at Craven Cottage isn't good enough.
Okay, very good. All right, guys. I thought we'd do something a little bit different today. I thought this would be interesting. Instead of having you guys rate the players, I'm going to share ratings from West London Sport and get your commentary on it. I thought that would be an interesting little switch here. So, again, I'm going to share the ratings from Andrew Rayburn on West London Sport. There is some commentary to go along with it, and then you guys can comment on it. It's kind of how we just did Stat Attack, and then you can share your man of the match as well. Sound good?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep,
all right. All right. And listen, credit to Andrew Rayburn for doing ratings. It's a brave person who wants to do ratings, so I'm going to give him credit for that. But this should be interesting because I'm going to share these, and I definitely want thoughts on the ratings from both of you. Let's start in net. Joe Lewis, again, this is from Andrew Rayburn on West London Sport. You can read it. He gave him a 6. He's made a good early save on Ian Doyle, but was exposed. Flimsy defending for the Preston goal. Ryan Fredericks, he gave a 7. Improved when asked to play forward as a wingback in the second half and felt he should have had a penalty on one of his forays forward. When he did a free kick a little later, he was booked for sarcastically applauding the referee. He, again, gave Fredericks a 7. Richard Stearman, he gave an 8. Fulham's best defender and a candidate for man of the match. He got several good blocks and challenges in. Sadly, his best work, a committed and fair tackle on Stevie May in injury time, ended with a striker being stretchered off with a knee injury. And let me just say, I hope Stevie May is okay. Tim Ream gave him a 6. After a shaky start, the American looked more assured after the switch to 3 at the back. James Husband gave him a 6, allowed Joel Garner the header on goal, which gave Preston the lead. Got forward well as both a conventional fullback and a wingback, and also wanted a penalty, but was fortunate to only see yellow after shoving Peter Clark to the ground on the ensuing melee. Jamie O'Hara, he gave a 6, struggled to impose himself in the holding role, and caretaker boss Peter Grant admitted afterwards he intended to play the ex-Spurs man further forward, but for the late withdrawal of Sakari, Matilla obviously did not go forward enough. Scott Parker, 6. Matilla's absence gave the 35-year-old his first taste of first-team action since April, and he put in a decent 73-minute shift. His passing was understandably rusty at times, but he made a couple of timely blocks. Sean Kavanaugh, he gave a 5, bar 1. Good ball into Ross McCormack. He had a poor first half to the point where he inevitably had the halftime substitution, was cheered by sections of the home fans. Unfortunately, guys, when I printed this out, it cut off the Tom Kearney commentary, but he did give Tom Kearney an 8. Moussa Dembele, he gave a 6. Apart from one shot from the edge of the box, which was superbly saved by Jordan Pickford, this was a game that largely passed by the talented Frenchman, let down by a lack of service. Ross McCormack, he also gave a 7. Went looking for the ball in the first half, but the tactical switch better suited him after the break when Kearney and the wingbacks did the donkey work around the box, produced the moment of magic, his 5th goal in 6 games to earn a point. And finally, he gave Sean Hutchinson a 7, replace Kavanaugh at the break to allow Fulham to go 3-5-2 and with solid performer in the back. All right, Mike, I'll start with you again. Sorry about it, that I could not share the commentary about Tom Kearney, because actually Tom Kearney played a very good match. Let me just say that. What do you make of those ratings from Andrew Rayburn from the West London Sport?
Well, I think they're pretty accurate with regards to the sort of order of how good and bad particular players were. I couldn't, when I did my scores, I couldn't give anyone an 8 on the the first half performance. Kearney for me was the best player in the second half and probably overall the most influential throughout the game. But even him, I could only give him a 7. Stearman was the best defender and McCormack as well. So, you know, you got it right with those three being the key players. But at Kavanaugh, I gave a 4. And everyone else, it was pretty much how I scored them. And just a word on Hutchinson, who, I'm not a fan of his.
Right.
But he fitted into the in between the two other centre-backs quite well. And I think the important thing for him was he didn't have to kick the ball long, because all he had to do was defend. When he had the ball, just give it to Stearman, give it to Ream, and they do the passing. So, he did okay, considering he hasn't probably played for 2 or 3 months.
Okay, well, let me ask you, Mike, could he work out long-term? You know, again, say it's, you know, again, we don't know the situation with Dan Byrne. Would you be okay with him, giving him another shot?
I'm always going to prefer Dan Byrne out of him and Hutchison, but he did well enough. He did well enough yesterday to, for next week to say, yeah, these are your free centre-backs. Yeah, fine, go with that.
Okay, very good. Giannis, how about you?
The ratings, I agreed with most of them, just a couple of exceptions. Ryan Fredericks, I wouldn't have given a 7, I'd give a 6. And I take one off because of his reaction to the penalty, not the yellow card. That could have got him into a lot of trouble. I thought that the Kavanaugh 5 was a fair one. I actually would have given Dembele 5 because I don't think he worked hard enough. Whereas I think Ross was, belting himself around the field. You need to see more from Musa, and I didn't see enough. Kearney did have a good game. I thought our best player was Stearman. Is so solid at the back, and that tackle on Stevie May, in injury time, and I'm sorry that May's got injured, and I echo your thoughts. I hope he gets well soon. That's as good a tackle as you'll see in the division this year. That was absolutely, and it was in the box. It was perfectly timed, and I think that's a microcosm of the way he's played. He's been a tremendous pickup for this club, and.
Yep.
For us to move forward this year, if we can stick with the 3-5-2, he's going to be front and center, because having that three at the back, you've got to be solid and rely obviously on the wing backs to drop. But I thought Stearman was outstanding yesterday. He's a very good player. And the other thing, just thinking about something that Grant said about. About bringing Matilla going, not being able to play, and Parker coming on. I'm surprised he even, as a manager, why you'd even talk about that. Because it's as soon as you do that, you offer an excuse. And I think at the end of the day, as a manager, you say, okay, we had to make a late change, but we've got no excuses. We've still got 11 pros. They still know how to play. We got off to a slow start. It was changed up at half-time, better second half, got the point. But don't start making excuses about the fact that, somebody's hurt his back and, that really did us in. Again, that really annoys me. Don't make excuses. The fans don't want to hear it. I'm sure the ownership don't want to hear it. And, if you lose to a better team or if things go wrong, then be man enough to admit it. Don't start talking about circumstance that changed your lineup.
Okay, very good there, Giannis. All right, we only got about 5 minutes left. Mike, I'm going to go to you. I just got dropped off for about 10 seconds. Could you just share with us your man of the match? I'll be right back, okay?
Yes, yeah, so my man of the match is actually Kearney because of his influence in the second half. Like I say, first half wasn't great for anyone, but I felt he was, once he's in his favoured position in the centre of midfield, He has so much more influence on the game. Stearman's very close. I agree with what Yanis said there. But, yeah, just for me, it was Kearney as man of the match.
Ross! Well, I'll give my one. He's dancing away somewhere. Mine, again, I think you're right, Mike. I thought Kearney had an outstanding second half. But Stearman, to me, is a beast, a real beast, and a really, really solid player. And he's one of those players that the longer he stays with this club, the more the fans are going to really love him. He reminds me very much of Roger Brown, and that's maybe the best compliment I can pay him, because we all loved Roger as a player. He gave it everything every game, and I don't see Stearman as any different. I mean, it was a very, very good pickup for our club.
Okay, very good
he's
by both of you.
About the armband. That's what he is, Yanis.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, good, guys. I'm sorry, Mike, did you have something you want to share?
No, I was just, we were just talking about the man of the match, and I just said that Stearman is a captain without the armband, really.
Yes, he is.
No, excuse me. It's a valid discussion, Mike. And, you know, we've talked about this, and I know how you feel about Ross McCormack. And he definitely is a captain. There are a few people that are leaders, and Richard Stearman definitely is one. So I see where you're going on that. All right, guys, we only got a little over 3 minutes. Final thoughts, Mike, on the match? Anything else you want to share or moving forward?
I just want to sort of say at the end of the game, you know, it wasn't a very good game. The players didn't play great, but only four of them came to the centre circle, and only two of them actually crossed the halfway line to applaud the fans. And for me, that was very disappointing. And too many of them wanted to rush back down into the cottage and get changed. And I just think. Everything at the moment is just really low, and it's reflected in that way.
Okay, very good. I'm glad that you mentioned that, because it's funny. I was thinking about that as well, because you did tweet that out. I want to mention, because I did actually tweet this back to Richard Stearman. He actually retweeted it. I wanted to say that he was a class act, because he was one of these players, Mike. And so I want to give a shout-out to Richard Stearman for doing that. Again, you know, class act. Definitely, you know, that's the right thing to do. Unfortunately, I wish more had done what he did, and like you mentioned, the three other players, I don't know them offhand, but again, I just remember, you know, the shot of Richard Stearman that was on the Fulham Twitter page, so I retweeted it because I thought that was nice, and it was the right thing to do. Yanis, how about you? Final thoughts and thoughts about what we're talking about?
I agree about the Stearman thing, but he's an absolutely class act, but there's a real low lull around the club right now. And there has been for about 3 weeks. And the players are obviously tetchy. The fans are tetchy. And it's all about the decision-making or lack of decision-making, you know, in the background. And the next few days, people need to get off their bottoms and make some decisions and do it quick. There's still some good managers out there that we could pick up. But we need to do it very quickly. It's a difficult game next week going up to the City Ground. And I'm hoping there's going to be an appointment. But the way it's been handled so far has been it's been an absolute laugher. It really has. It's been it's embarrassing for our club. And
yep.
We need to address that quickly.
Okay, very good. Very good way to end the show, Yanis. So I'm glad that you shared that. And, of course, what you shared, Mike, as well. We got to wrap up this show. Great show, guys. You guys were excellent. For Yanis and Mike, I'm Russ Goldman. Thank you, as always, for listening to Cottage Talk Extra Time. Cheers, guys.
Bye. What's
cheers, Russ. Cheers, Jen. Bye.
Bye.